I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Dr. Philippa White. Welcome, Philippa.
Thank you, Michael. Good to talk with you.
Now, what's your official description here at Tuitt Place?
I'm the director of Tuitt Place, which is a support service for survivors of institutional child abuse. And we've been operating in this location for the last 15, 16 years.
And when you say this location, here at 24 High Street, Fremantle?
Yes, on the ground floor. We take up about a third of the building in the front of the ground floor area of 24 High Street, which is the old Cleopatra Hotel.
Is it? The old Cleopatra Hotel?
Yes, it was a pretty wild old pub in the day, so I believe.
Well, it feels like a good place. Are we in the front bar or something like that?
Yes, apparently it was some kind of saloon bar, and people often come in with stories of the hijinks they got up to in this place.
Well, there's all sorts of other hijinks going on at the moment because you're in some disputation with what people generally call the Christian Brothers. The Christian Brothers, you'll tell me in a moment their formal name in terms of who owns the building and who'd like you to leave, but they want you to leave the building and they will expel you from the place if you don't. Is that broadly what's happening?
Yes. We've paid a peppercorn rent here for the last 12 years since it's been Tuitt Place. And we've operated here on the basis that our low rent is part of the Christian Brothers' efforts to make up for past wrongs. And they provided also unconditional donations during that time to our operation, as have a variety of other past provider organisations. We were told in June last year, 2021, that the Christian Brothers intended to realise this asset and that...
You mean to sell it?
Well, they didn't quite say that. They said that they needed Tuitt Place.
And they wanted it back and they wanted you out.
Yes. So we were to be out by June the 30th this year.
Was anybody else occupying the building at that point?
At that time, Notre Dame University was still a tenant in the back part of the ground floor and the upstairs of this building.
How in your time has Notre Dame University used the building? That is the upstairs and back area.
They have had two groups of international students per year from Portland, Oregon, would come and live here for 5 or 6 months and have an international student experience and attend Notre Dame University Fremantle.
And have fun in Fremantle, what a great thing to do.
They've often had a great time by the sounds of it.
So what, is there a lease or something between Notre Dame and the owner of the building to enable that to happen?
Yes, there was a long lease that was for the last 18 years or up until December 2021, whereby Notre Dame paid rent to be the tenant and to have their students here. That expired.
So when did it expire?
It expired in December 2021.
So during 2022, Notre Dame haven't been running the students upstairs?
No, and in fact for a couple of years prior to that they haven't either. It stopped with COVID and didn't restart, yes.
So when then did Tuitt Place come in here?
So I started here in 2007 with what was called CBERS Consultancy, so Christian Brothers Ex-Residents and Students Consultancy.
Now, what was the background to that consultancy? That effectively became Tuitt Place, did it?
Yeah, so that was a scaled-down version of CBERS in Subiaco, which had been a much larger service and provided support to men who'd been in Christian Brothers institutions and also to women who'd been in Sisters of Mercy and Nazareth institutions. So nearly all child migrants or former child migrants were in that group. And then when I took on CBERS Consultancy here, that service had really wound down. There was a big travel scheme that had ended and there were only a few active clients. And the plan was that I would run it here for a couple of years to see out the last of that work and then it would just cease to exist.
During the period before which those events happened and people thought it was going to cease to exist, what were the issues that the clients of the service then brought to the service?
So the main issue had been complaints of historical child sexual abuse, which came to the forefront in the late 1980s when there was a lot of media exposure of abuse in particularly Christian Brothers institutions. There had been the exposure of the child migration scheme through the work of Margaret Humphreys and the Child Migrant Trust, and this large-scale public understanding of the terrible abuse that occurred, and there'd been this child migration scheme.
So in the early 2000s, it looked like the service is winding down, in a sense, if not demand. You'd done a lot of work. What happened?
Yes, so there'd been, the Christian Brothers had funded travel schemes for former child migrants to reunite with families, so trips back to the UK and Malta. And there'd been also a British government scheme and an Australian government scheme, all aimed at family reunification for child migrants. And all those schemes had by that time finished, and so there wasn't much call for the service of CBERS by the mid-2000s.
So the premises in Subiaco that from which that service was being provided, what was planned then?
So that was in a rented old house in Alvin Street in Subiaco, and that was, I don't think that property was owned by the organisation. It was, so the lease just expired and they moved out of that property.
And not fast forwarding, but moving our locality from Subiaco to High Street Fremantle, what was happening in this building at that point before you arrived?
At that time, it was the Edmund Rice Institute for Social Justice, which was a fairly fledgling entity that had connections with Notre Dame University here and was intended to be a self-sustaining, ultimately, a social justice organisation, so research and that sort of thing. So they occupied the majority of the ground floor. I had the small office in the back area, and at that time there were Notre Dame students upstairs from overseas.
Now, some people, but perhaps not everybody, will know who Edmund Rice was, but he was the founder of the Christian Brothers, wasn't he?
He was. He was a married man who was reasonably wealthy and in Ireland, and he was very horrified by the plight of young children, men, boys in the streets who had no opportunities, and so he founded the Christian Brothers as a way to give those young boys a home and guidance and education.
And about what period are we talking about?
Testing my historical knowledge, Mir. It would have been in the early 1900s.
So just over 100 years ago.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned the Edmund Rice Institute
and
social justice. That was a separate organisation from whatever the Christian Brothers are as a religious order, who owned the property?
Yes, it was. It was an incorporated entity, and it was intended that it could get its own funding from Lottery West and other sources, and it was provided with funding from the Christian Brothers and this premises.
And from what you've said, it sounds as though there were arrangements in place between it, the Edmund Rice Institute for Social Justice, and Notre Dame University setting up, whereby they would work together in some cooperative way.
Yes, there was a connection there. I'm not exactly sure what it was and what all the arrangements were. It was hoped that it would become, a leading edge research centre of excellence. But various barriers were, came along, and it never succeeded in its goal of becoming self-sufficient.
So was there a point at which the Edmund Rice Institute, as a research or advocacy organisation working in that academic way, ceased to operate here and you expanded in the building?
Yes, that would have been probably around 2010 or 11 that things wound down here and they moved out.
Now, at that point, was there anything that happened in the state or in the Commonwealth of Australia, which caused you, regrettably, to have more business.
Yes, in late 2007, there was a scheme introduced by the WA state government called Redress WA, which was a scheme designed to provide a compensation payment and an apology to anyone who'd suffered abuse or neglect in state-governed care in WA.
And why did that cause your services to be activated even more?
Because CBERS held the files for a lot of men who had already done abuse claims in regard to their time in Christian Brothers homes, a lot of those people recontacted the service, so contacted me and said, can you help with a Redress WA application and do you have my records? So a record of previous complaints.
And was there a lot of work that came out of Redress WA at that point?
An enormous amount, and that's when the client group here expanded into a much wider group of people who were not child migrants, or Australian-born care leavers. They'd been in various homes and institutions, Aboriginal people who'd been in missions, our foster care. So it became much wider, and we obtained state government funding to provide a support service for the Redress WA scheme.
So I'd assume the state government looked for various service providers and you had to apply?
Yes, they put it out for tender, and a range of different entities around Perth applied and were, became support services for that scheme.
Now, remind our listeners of what was possible by way of redress under that scheme at that point.
When the scheme was introduced, it was a maximum payment of $80,000 and an apology and support and counselling during the process of the of applying to that scheme.
Now, that was introduced, I think, during the course of a Labor administration in WA. Subsequently, there was a Liberal coalition administration. Did the rules change under the latter?
Yes, they did. It was under the Carpenter government that it was introduced, and then the Barnett government came into power in 2009. The one of the first things they did was cut the payment level from $80,000 maximum to $45,000.
And Labor got back in again eventually after that. Did they change it back up?
No, they didn't, and we sort of put a bit of pressure on them to do that, but there was a sense that it was pretty difficult to go back and unscramble that egg, and also that was during the process of the Royal Commission, and it was known that there would be a national redress scheme, so the WA government,
in a sense, the name of
that.
The game was changing, so the
yes.
the national Royal Commission into child
sexual abuse
in various institutions was conducted. It affected not only the Christian Brothers, many other religious orders within the Catholic and other Christian churches, but well beyond those settings, other groups generally. I mean, it's been a terrible and eye-opening period for many of us in Australia, but people in other countries as well. What came out of the Commonwealth Royal Commission that affects the work you do here at Tuitt Place?
As you say, a real eye-opener and a very large-scale and comprehensive inquiry by the Royal Commission that led to various measures, one of which was the removal of the statute of limitations on child sexual abuse claims in different states across Australia, and also the introduction of a national redress scheme, which was the WA government signed up to that in June 2018.
Removing the statute of limitations meant that people who couldn't sue because the events in question were too far ago could now sue regardless of the elapse of time.
That's right, and WA's laws changed so that prior deeds and arrangements for previous settlements could be overturned.
So it freed up the whole area. And just in terms of the work that you do and have been doing for some time, particularly since those changes were made, describe to our listener the range of services you provide people who come here.
So we provide trauma-informed counselling and support groups. We do phone outreach. A lot of our clients are older and find it difficult to get to Fremantle. We have an aged care navigator who helps care leavers, as this group is known, to connect with their aged care entitlements and aged care services. We are funded to do national redress applications, and that's a big area of our work at the moment. We also provide assistance to access records, family tracing, and opportunities for social connection and activities designed to break down social isolation.
So a meeting place, in a sense.
Yes, yes, a real community, and it has grown in that way. We joined forces with a former child migrant, Laurie Humphreys, back in 2007. Laurie founded FACT, Forgotten Australians Coming Together, and his dream was to have a drop-in centre where anyone who'd been in out-of-home care could call in and get any kind of help, but also just stop by, have a chat, have a cup of tea, you know, and be part of something.
In a sense, it's almost only in Fremantle, and certainly this building is so conducive to something like that, I should have thought.
Yes, it really is, and it's the building, the place, has become more and more significant over time as people have gone through a journey here, often starting off doing a redress process, which is very painful and traumatic for people. But then a number of people have gone through that process, felt better, felt connected, wanted to give back, and have then gone on to volunteer or to take on leadership roles. So half of our board are people with lived experience of out-of-home care, and four of them were in Christian Brothers homes.
And speaking more broadly, your clientele, numbers in the what?
So in the last financial year, we had 550 people receive a direct service from Tuart Place, so a direct clinical service. We have a larger group, about 1,500 care leavers on our mailing list. But 550 people approximately in the last year received some kind of direct clinical service from Tuart Place.
Now, go back just a relatively short distance, but in the middle of 2021, you mentioned this earlier, but what happened then?
So that's when we were contacted by the Christian Brothers province leader, Brother Brady, in Melbourne, all the leadership is based there now, contacted to say that we needed to move out. They enclosed a final deed of surrender and release.
You had a lease at that point, did you?
We did have a lease up until June 2021. And so this final document arrived with a letter saying that we had to leave in 12 months' time, and also a lease that they wanted us to sign, agreeing to be out at that time.
And so you basically had to surrender all of your interest in the place, and you're given 12 months to move out.
That's right, yes.
So was there any explanation given for why they wanted you to go?
It was said at the time that there were so many civil claims, that the Christian Brothers had been put under huge financial pressure by that, and also the National Redress Scheme, and that you know, they were fulfilling their obligations to survivors through those two processes, civil claims and the redress scheme, and that they now were no longer going to support Tuart Place.
I don't quite follow that. That's the full explanation. They felt no need to support
Tuart
Place.
Yes, that it had been 25 years of support that they'd provided altogether, and that was long enough, or words to that effect, and that you know, this had now come to an end.
So you mentioned earlier in this discussion that the Christian Brothers plus other religious groups, Order of Nuns, and perhaps other philanthropists or people doing charitable things had financially supported your operation over the years. Was that the same? Is that still the same today? Let's go back to the middle of 2021. Where did your money come from to run the place?
So our core funding comes from the state government through the Department of Communities, so we're funded to provide a service for Forgotten Australians care leavers, and that full range of services. We get funding from the federal government through No More Legal Service to help people prepare national redress applications. And we've also received funding from the Sisters of Mercy, Sisters of Nazareth, and the Christian Brothers provided donations up until the end of 2021. And also another large religious organisation that doesn't want to be named.
Well, it's wonderful that people have done these things, and the need to do so, one might have thought, was obvious to everyone, and it certainly was to them. But it sounds from what you've just said that the provincial brother of the Christian Brothers in Melbourne let you know that no more of that would be happening.
That's right, yes, that that, you know, this had come to an end. And he spoke of the litigious environment in Western Australia and the great number of civil claims that had come through in Western Australia. And he was, you know, they were not happy with how that had transpired in WA.
Well, one could be forgiven for thinking of what you said, that they needed to sell Chubbard House in order to help pay some of the some of those claims.
That was what was said to us, that they needed to realise this asset, and we don't think that's true, though, and there's evidence to the contrary of that. So the Christian Brothers do have a large number of property assets and a large portfolio, and we don't believe they need the money from the sale of this place to make ends meet.
So what was Jewett Place's response to the demand you surrender and accept a you'd be leaving 12 months hence, i.e. in June just gone?
We responded straight away by making a case to Brother Gerard that we needed to stay, that surely there was an alternative to this, and that we were willing to work with him in whatever way we could so that Tuart Place could stay here, because the place had become a second home to many people, really familiar, accessible, workable premises that enormously difficult to relocate. So we did look at all sorts of options for that, but then really pleaded with the Christian Brothers to let us stay, and suggested things like it be given to one of their ministries and we're just allowed to stay on a long-term lease in the current area, or that it was gifted to our charity, and that you know, that it would be maintained for charitable purposes. We also put in an offer to buy it. We offered you know, less than what it had been valued at, but still a reasonable amount. But that offer wasn't accepted.
And what about your proposal generally, that you should be able to just stay here, perhaps with the property falling into the hands of being managed by a ministry of the Christian Brothers?
Yes, that idea wasn't actually responded to formally. It was just the position was just restated that we needed to go, that this wasn't an alternative, that the building was going to be sold or used for another purpose, and that we definitely needed to be out.
Now, did the Brother Provincial arrive here in person to pass on these demands or requests, or was this all done by letter, or was it just the lawyers? How did it go?
It was done by letter originally, and we requested a face-to-face meeting. At that time, travel restrictions were in place,
of course.
So there was, you know...
COVID's affected everything.
Yes, hasn't it ever. We had a series of Zoom meetings, and we had our patrons, Dean Smith and Rachel Seawood, at one of those Zoom meetings with us, to put forward our case, you know, to make the argument, surely there's something we can work out so that we can stay here.
So far, none of that's come to any sort of satisfactory conclusion, I take it.
No, it hasn't, and we're at an impasse now where, you know, we've said that we cannot go, that this is an issue of such significance, of such an important issue of justice, that we feel we have to take a stand and remain in place.
There was a protest just this week. In fact, it's Thursday as we meet to talk about this, but yesterday there was a rally out the front of the building here in High Street. What was all that about, and who was there, and what was said?
It was a very heartening rally, Michael. It was a great show of support for Tuart Place. We had approximately 150 people there at different times. We had Minister Simone McGurk speaking, Minister Dave Kelly, Senator Dean Smith, and two of our survivors got up and spoke with incredible passion and courage. It was very moving, and there was a great sense of support from the crowd there. You know, people are really behind this. They really connect with the injustice of this issue, and that this is just plain wrong and needs to change.
You mentioned a number of names, and I think they're all of politicians, and in that sense a bipartisan major party grouping. You mentioned Senator Dean Smith and Rachel Seawood earlier.
Yes.
Having been a Green senator, yes. And they spoke on your behalf, you said earlier?
Yes, Rachel was one of our speakers but came down with COVID in the days before. And Senator Jordan Steelejohn had also been keen to attend, but had a calendar conflict, unfortunately. But he and Brad Pettit wrote to the Christian Brothers and provided us with a copy of their letter.
Brad Pettit being a former mayor and now a Greens member of the upper house of the state parliament. Simone McGurk, the minister you mentioned, a Labor minister for community and related topics. And Dave Kelly being a Labor minister.
Yes.
And I think possibly a former CBC student in his younger days. So you've got a broad coalition of political support, and you've got a community support behind you. It must be heartening.
Yes, it's very heartening. And yesterday was very affirming of our cause and of our determination to stay. People are right behind us in that. And a lot of allied community services like Advocare, Uniting West, certainly a lot of individuals and organisational leaders have written to the Christian Brothers and provided us with copies of those letters and are really standing up for a service that they see as a really great service.
Now, I understand coincidentally with the rally yesterday, you've been contacted by the chair of the board of the Edmund Rice Company, which is the formal owner of the property at the moment. And is there an opportunity for you to meet with them or with her?
Yes, we're very heartened by this new development too, which is a meeting which will now take place on the 4th of November. Helen Marney, who's the chair of Edmund Rice Community Services, is coming over from the east to meet with our board here in Perth to have a discussion, and that's a great start. We're very encouraged by that, and we're really looking forward to meeting with her.
That's the most positive thing I'm sure you've heard for a while. Yes. And let's hope it produces something. It looks to me, having walked around this building, just as when Notre Dame were here, and before that at some point, Edmund Rice Institute for Social Justice, a very important expression, social justice, that this building couldn't be used by you as well as other people. There's the hall upstairs, there's the back area. Would that seem to be feasible?
Yes, that would certainly work, and that's how it was when the Notre Dame students were here, that the back area is completely separate and lockable, as is the upstairs. So it lends itself to another organisation or organisations using that other area that we're not part of, and, you know, potentially as a commercial rental. Or, you know, there's lots of possibilities there, and, you know, we'd welcome that.
From your point of view, like from everything I'm hearing you say, no one ever has suggested that the building should be given to you. You, in fact, said Chewett Place or whatever vehicle that would be, once made an offer to buy it, but not at a sum that was attractive to the would-be vendor. But are you looking, in that sense, merely for security of tenure? Is that it?
Yes, that's really all we want, is security of tenure.
And what would that look like, do you think?
That would be a long-term lease at a rent that was reasonable. You know, we could pay a bit more than we pay now. If we pay a really low rent now, we could pay closer to commercial value. Mm. But it was suggested by various people, including us, that one possibility is for the Christian Brothers to give this building to FACT, which is a charity. And one of our patrons, Robert Isaacs, who's a Noongar elder and a Christian Brothers ex-resident, suggested to the brothers that they gift the building to FACT, Jewett Place, in a similar model to how Clontarf was gifted to the Indigenous Land Corporation about 10 years ago. And that's been a really successful model where a group of various Aboriginal services and the very successful Clontarf Aboriginal College now operates. So Robert's idea was that could be, you know, emulated here.
That would give the institutional aspects of the service perpetuity, really? Mm.
Yes, yeah, by a charity that, you know, would always maintain charitable purposes. Or we could, you know, it could be gifted to an Edmund Rice entity and we could just as happily stay here then.
Yes. Philippa, thank you for joining me to talk about this. It's an issue of great significance, not only in Fremantle where we meet, but well and truly beyond this. The matters we touched upon and don't need to rehearse again that have affected the lives and thinking of all Australians in the last two or three or four decades are all brought to bear on this. So I wish you well and in your meeting with the chair of the Edmund Rice Company when they come. Best of luck.
Thank you, Michael. We greatly appreciate your interest.